gotten this stuff, and it was assured they had. So me, who had been in the business for years, looked at that, and I thought I was putting myself in jeopardy. So there's a lot of hysteria out there that may not always be truthful. There's thousands of dollars of fine if you get caught. That's one of the reasons we put on the BDS application, is that you've done your research on that, because that gives the state a chance to raise a fine or levy a heavier fine. They have the tendency to go into a fine if you haven't done anything to kind of slap you on the wrist. This gave them a little bit more leverage, admitting that you had done your research and they find out you hadn't and you lied to them. They feel like they can hit you on the wrist, or, you know, hit you in the pocket a little bit more. We have an excavator that got caught some years ago, didn't do his work. He got a $7,500 fine, and the builder got a $7,500 fine. He won't tear a house down unless he sees my report. So the fines are out there, scare people. So how much you need to do to go over the top of that, I don't know, but I'll leave that with you. The lady came up and testified about developers buying houses from little old ladies. There was an article in the paper here 4, 5, 6 months ago. We're probably all sure of that. I can tell you about 15 years ago, on a couple of Sundays, I drove from 11th to 82nd, from Hawthorne to Holgate. I found about 100 properties that had a lot that I wanted some interest in buying. I sent out 60 letters telling them I had an interest in buying those lots. I got two responses back, and those two responses were, I'm not interested. There may be guys out there doing it, but in my 42-year career, I don't know yet that I've bought a lot that wasn't a realtor involved in the process. Maybe a realtor contacted the little old lady, signed a listing agreement with little old lady, and came and saw me, but there was somebody protecting them. So there may be a little bit of that happening out there, but it's not a great amount, in my opinion. I want to remind you that if you have a 120-day delay on 300 houses, that's 3,600 months. That's 1,200 months. That's 100 years with a delay. Think about the cost of 100 years with delay if we delay everything 120 days. About 25 years ago, a good friend of mine got me started in the building business. I was complaining to him about the regulations, the cost of building in Portland versus other jurisdictions. He says, remember one thing. The harder it is, the more competition it keeps away from your doors. So think about that in the context that, yes, we have to tackle these issues, whether it's delay, whether it's deconstruction. But if you get too much regulation, you drive competition away. You not necessarily drive the problem away. You find guys like me that for 42 years have figured a way to stay in this business, while some of my competition has gone to Washington County or Clackamas County or across the river to Vancouver. I think that's pretty much. One thing on the 60-day appeal, and Nancy can address this better, in talking with the codes officer, there's going to be times the code officer is not going to get to that appeal for 60 days, so the neighborhood may even have a 95-day delay without even really producing much evidence of that delay. It depends upon the volume of what's on the codes appeal officer's desk. And the codes appeal person told Mary Nancy, that there could be times that he might be writing his decision on the 59th, 60th day. So I think that pretty much covers mine, and I'll turn it over.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
And I wasn't going to ask you a question because I was hoping to catch my ride home. I just lost my ride home, so I'm going to be asking Al if I can bum a ride. No, I got to figure it out. I'll be taking the number 12. I'll be taking the number 12 bus, but you've testified eloquently, and I want to ask you a question. And by the way, I think the DRAC has done good work here. But you've raised the issue of how to address lead and asbestos. So I've been going through what other cities and communities do in Oregon. And I wanted to ask you, because you've made this point about regulatory burden and cost and making sure there's no unintended consequences, and you're very thoughtful on this. I always read you carefully in the newspaper, because when I see the word fish and some quote, I think maybe I've been quoted. And
then, my latest quote wasn't very good either, so no, it wasn't on a line, but anyway.
I remind people, you and I are not related. You're entitled to your view, but I want to ask you about asbestos and lead paint. Right now, when you get a permit from the Bureau of Development Services, you have to self-certify a number of things, correct?
Pretty much, and I say pretty much because I use Rob quite a bit, and also another
certain things. Justin gave me a little primer on this, but there's a number of things you have to self-certify. You have to say, I, you know, I, I attest to the following, and you sign it, and you're done.
Correct.
So it looks like at least one county and one city has a similar system for asbestos and lead. There's a box that you check to say you've done a survey. There's a box to check that says, in the event it's been detected, you've complied with the law in terms of its removal. And there's some other box, and at the bottom, it says you better be careful before you sign this because this is a legal document, and you are attesting that everything is true. You sign it, you file it, and you're done. Why wouldn't that be workable?
To be honest with you, I haven't seen the ones you're talking about. Hillsborough has one I thought was pretty nice. We threw it around, we tossed it around at DRAC, where you check off boxes. It talks about even whether you've got an oil tank in your basement.
Yeah.
It's a hazardous problem. You can check it off.
The self-certification.
I think you have to have a way to get to the penalties. And I'll give you a prime example, and I can't figure out why it's this way. When you take out a temporary electrical permit, and there's hundreds of those taken out, they're only supposed to be taken out by a supervising electrician or homeowner. And we as builders take them out all the time. It's the same way across the river in Washington, the same exact wording. And when I was a rookie builder, I asked, why don't you change the form since you let us take it out? The whole darn industry looks away. So there are boxes like that we check off on specific forms that the industry looks away or the regulatory branch looks away. In this case, I'm talking about is an electrical temporary permit to put a temp up on a job site. I don't think anybody really cares a whole lot. You guys inspect it. The power company inspects it. You know, nobody gets hurt. If the fines that are coming out from DEQ and maybe from Oregon Health Authority on lead base are regular and heavy, it's going to change the industry. You know, I mentioned my excavator. He won't touch something unless you got a report because he's already been fined $7,500. So if there's anybody cheating the system, there's always going to be somebody cheating the system. But sometimes you're led that way by the fact you can check an electrical box form off and nobody does anything or cares about it. But maybe over here you better not check off the hazardous one.
I understand what I'm saying? I use an analogy. When people come to seek employment with the city, we have to fill out an I-9. And they have to show identification. We Xerox it. We check the box. We are not required to call the State Transportation Bureau and say, did you issue this license on such? We're not required to call the State Department and say, is this passport valid? We're covered under the law. It's just someone has given us thing, we presume valid, it's signed, and we've complied. And I'm very sensitive to the concern I'm hearing from the Bureau and the Commissioner in charge about imposing new paperwork requirements. I'm sensitive to the concern about new regulatory, having to, you know, have inspections and other kinds of things. I mean, these things are issues of manpower and cost and other things. But I'll just tell you, someone who lives in a neighborhood, I think I would feel more comfortable if I knew that someone had checked a box saying we did the survey as required by law, because DEQ requires that you do a survey external and internal. It's a legal requirement. And someone checks that box and says we did it. And in the event the survey says there's a problem, and the event the survey says, there's a box that says that you contracted with the appropriate person to remedy it. I'm not suggesting that requires Paul to send anyone out to, unless there's a complaint, to do anything further. But it seems like lots of other cities and counties have just gone that route of a self-certification. And it seems to me that might be consistent with what the public wants to know without imposing an onerous requirement on your industry. And if you're right that there aren't egregious violations and that many of the home builders are responsible, then it's just checking three boxes and signing something. If we're wrong as with respect to somebody in your industry doesn't have your ethics, then we hope they throw the book at that person. And we hope that form gives us a basis to go heavy on the fines.
Here's part of that confusion. Mary Helen, correct me if I'm wrong. You're not required to get an asbestos survey under four units. But if you get caught dealing with asbestos or letting asbestos loose, then you are penalized because you didn't get the survey. So am I right on that, Mary Helen?
That's part of legislative reform that some of the interested parties are looking at that I know of. I'm sure there's other people, and I've heard lots of people speak about it today, but I know that there are people looking at that, so that because they're not required by state law for anything under 4 units. So, but if a worker's exposed to it, then that's where they...
Well, I think Hillsborough has been creative on this one.
Yeah.
Because they just said, you must ascertain the presence of asbestos in or outside the structure, and you must conform to the DEQ rule. So...
Yeah, you could go above their requirement.
So they just said, and that does not seem to me to be an onerous requirement, A, because of the impact on worker safety and health, and B, what might happen with the neighbor and what happens with the dumpster and anyone in the chain. I don't know that we can resolve this today, Mayor.
Yeah, I don't either.
But it does strike me that if the DRAC is operating at a very high level and coming up with a compromise before us, that maybe the easiest thing to do is just to pose the question to DRAC, is there a certification process that they can recommend to us, add a separate sheet to the application, and then test drive it. See whether that solves the problem without a heavier hand of regulation.
The only problem I see with this, and Rob and I talked about it, is when that gets signed off, that you're checking the box off that I'm doing my asbestos certification, whatever, either I've got to sign that form and have a blank form that I give to Rob that he keeps in a stack at his office or in his car when he turns in my applications, or Rob has to sign it for me.
I will do that.
As he and I talked about, he's got to know the builder really, really well, and then he's probably going to not sign it even if he doesn't know him well. So there's a little bit of a – it's kind of like where we all have been, where you sign a check in advance and you trust somebody to do something with that
check.
You're
right, because Hillsborough requires the property owner to sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't allow you to – maybe the law allows you to do an attorney in fact. But
And to follow up a little bit on that idea, I meant to mention this earlier. One reason we went to the registered letter was – one of the land use staff said just a couple of weeks ago somebody signed a fraudulent land use application. They'd send a letter out. So
I've been convinced by Commissioner Fritz on that. But this okay. this one doesn't seem like the thoughtful people who came up with the ordinance before us, it seems to me, could fix this in a meeting and come up with an additional check, couple of boxes to check that doesn't require the director to look behind the certification, but that requires that someone say, we've done the survey, and if necessary, we've done the abatement.
Well, I'd like the director to come up after we're done. And I know Mary Helen hasn't had her testimony yet, so there are some other staff
I should tell jokes or something at this point.
You could.
Channel Tony Robbins and get everybody up moving circulation. Everybody said the things that we've accomplished. I think we've done great work. I was really happy to be a part of it. I started this out with saying the very first thing I said was, tell me the things I don't know, because there's a lot I don't know. And so I think everybody involved in the process learned. I think all of you learned from this process. I wanted to address a couple things about the hazardous waste. It was, I think, monumental that we got the state and the city in a room talking and working on issues, and we're going to continue this. But we kind of had to wait till we got to this point and have council say, carry on. You know, and I think there's great impetus to do that. I want to speak a little bit to this committee. I think that this DRAC subcommittee was highly representative of a diverse bunch of interests. I kind of took a little bit of offense when Terry said something that we didn't do enough public process between Jeff and Claire and Rob and the people on that committee. We went to over 50 meetings, and they were nighttime meetings, and they were daytime meetings, and they were not happy meetings. So we did do a lot of public outreach, and we did do that. I think that we saw a broad array of opinions and took all of those into consideration. And I'm going to go back to, I've said this many times since December 17th, Robert McCullough was not a big fan, and he sent me a flaming email telling me what an idiot I was. And so I just said, we need to meet for lunch. And then December 17th, he proposed marriage to me. So I thought that was a pretty good turnaround. Yeah.
I don't think he meant to send that email to you. I think it was from one of us. He was in.
Oh, well, it could have been. You know, but I was in good company, and I knew that, you know. But I think, and so now he's a supporter. And I wanted to relay to you that I, prior to being here, I was at the chairs and directors meeting, ran this proposal by them. They said, it's not perfect, but nothing's perfect, but we support what you do, and they've heard back from their neighborhood, so we have that support. I was glad that Brandon from Restore Oregon was able to come to the table and add information to this, that Rob became involved, and the builders that could show us where there were loopholes or things that wouldn't work. The things you didn't hear, DRAC first identified deconstruction as a really big issue, but we said it needs clear definition and it needs a lot of work. And I have just recently, Monday, did a ride-along with a building inspector. And the very first two houses I went to were older homes that were being remodeled by guys that really want to remodel older homes. There's got to be some synergy there. And in my flying little wild brain, I see a lot of opportunity in our innovation program that we could find those people, use those resources with neighborhoods, because you've heard neighborhoods don't have time, they aren't equipped, but there are people that are doing this, and if we can connect those people, neighborhood wants to save a house, there's people that are doing it, energetic, they want to do it, they have a business model to do that, somehow we can find a connection, and I think your follow-on BPS committee could do that. I think the oversight committee for this proposal, yes, it needs to be well-balanced, but we did a really good job getting here, and I think that most everybody wants to continue on to do that. I don't think it needs to be a whole bunch of new people to get caught up to speed. I just read an article about Los Angeles. You could have taken out the words Los Angeles and put in Portland, and I shared it with
Sunday.
I shared it with Matthew and Jackie Dingfelter and said, look, and we're a year ahead of them. They've been talking about this for 16 months, and they don't even have a committee to address this. They have a bunch of people, and they think they're going to do something. So I want to say, yay, we're ahead of Los Angeles on that one. I think we were able to identify, you just used the word unintended consequences. I think we identified a lot of those, but there's going to be more, and we don't know, and that's the whole part of this thing. Back to quickly on the hazardous, the ONI summit that's coming up on February 28th, two representatives, I think I mentioned this earlier, but I think it's really important because I heard a lot of talk about hazardous materials. Unfortunately, it's scheduled at the same time as the mayor's presentation at 1:10, but there's a work session.
I think I know where people will be then.
Well, there's a work session, and they're going to explain regulatory functions of all the agencies. And one agency that didn't come up in all of this that is got the biggest hammer of all is the EPA. They have huge fines, and it's the complainer that gets to collect part of the fine if they find offenses. And so that needs to be explored and how it filters down through the state, and it's very complicated, and please don't ask me to explain it. I just know it's complicated. That needs to be brought into the discussion. So sort of in closing, and I always usually close, and John Wooden's like my favorite person to quote. He has a quote that said, if it isn't difficult, it isn't worth doing. And so I think we took a difficult task, and we did a lot of really good work, and there's a lot more to be done, and I'm trusting that this, if there's one or two or three committees, but task force that follow this up, I think will do a lot more good for the city. But right now we need to protect what's out there, and I think this is the best way to do it for right now. And thank you very much for sitting here for 3.5 hours listening to testimony.
Thank you for the many hours that you and other DRAC members put into this work. Other questions for these great volunteers?
Did you say John Wooden?
John Wooden.
It's the first time I've heard John Wooden quoted in this chamber, so I appreciate
it. Oh, no, I did the last time. He has another one about teamwork.
All right. So I appreciate it. I just wanted to say I thought you guys did phenomenal work, and I've been sitting here saying nothing today because I figured this looks good. I'm going to vote yes, although I understand people have came to address a lot of other issues that we're not addressing in this particular piece. But thank you very, very much for all of the work you did. Everybody who was involved, including the commissioner in charge. And I've not followed this issue all that closely, but I mean, I was aware of where we were several months ago, and then I looked at this leading up to this meeting and said, this looks like a terrific way to address the issues. So I just wanted to say thank you very much. There's one thing that's puzzled me, though. According to Wikipedia, deconstruction is a literary theory and philosophy of language derived principally from Jacques Derrida's 1967 work of grammatology. The premise of deconstruction is that all of Western literature and philosophy implicitly relies on a metaphysics of presence, where intrinsic meaning is accessible by virtue of pure presence. Deconstruction denies the possibility of a pure presence and thus of essential or intrinsic meaning. So I've been surprised to learn today that so many Portlanders deny the possibility of pure presence and thus of essential or intrinsic meaning. But that's, I guess, another example of Portland being weird.
Thank you, Steve.
I think I also need to, and I didn't say this, I think I gave Nancy your mug about being a cat herder at the last meeting. Staff has been tremendously supportive, and I think that that needs to be recognized, because I've been on a number of city committees that haven't functioned as well, and I don't think it's staff, but I just think that somehow it was a perfect storm that we got all the right people in the room and a really good product came out, and there was a lot of support from Paul and all of his staff at every meeting to inform and have honest discussions like, oh, this won't work. So, or this is a great idea. So that part needs to be recognized as well, because they put a lot of time and effort into it in a really busy time for them.
Thank you.
Thank you for that acknowledgement. Thanks to you, especially to the three of you, for your citizen leadership on this matter. My favorite John Wooden quote is that success is the peace of mind of knowing that you did the best to become the best you're capable of becoming. And I think that you have three particularly have done your best to make this code rewrite the best that it's capable of becoming at this point, and that you have reached a compromise. And I think another thing that is often said is that if nobody's happy, then you've done a good job of reaching a compromise. So I think we've heard that very clearly. So I'm not hearing any amendment requests on the code, because I want to bring us back to the charge that we gave you was to look at the demolition delay regulations, and in particular the K1 exceptions. Nancy Thornton, in her excellent presentation, and thank you for staffing this entire project, Nancy, pointed out that after Director Scarlett and I made changes in the summer of last year to clarify that it was just a one-for-one exception to that demolition delay, we have in fact experienced a lot fewer demolition delays. We've done fewer demolitions, so that has done what it's supposed to do. You were charged to look at what's the long-term version of that, and that's what we've got here. As a result of having a great public process and several public hearings, we've heard from a lot of community members, including the United Neighbors for Reform, that there's a lot of work that is that neighbors are anxious for, and with the construction trade picking up astronomically as the recovery has taken place, plus the relative difference between not having any construction at all over the course of recession or very little to now phenomenal amounts of changes happening in neighborhoods. It's very challenging to figure out how to manage that, and I know that your staff in planning and sustainability are working hard on code language, the comprehensive plan, looking at design and those kinds of issues. In the meantime, we also need to look at affordable housing. And so I'm pleased that the Housing Commissioner has agreed to take on this question of what are the appropriate incentives or requirements, and then we will certainly want that committee to give their recommendation to the Development and Review Advisory Committee, because the fees would be assessed at the permit center. There's the issue of hazardous materials. Again, Mary Helen, thank you for your leadership on that. We could do the simple checkoff piece. It's still more self-certification, and what I've heard from the community is that they're looking for more than that. If we're going to do more inspections, we as a council have a choice to make between do we want to fund them with general fund for that purpose. The Development Services Bureau Advisory Committee and Budget Advisory Committee is asking for money for inspections of rental housing as our priority for where we think we have the most hazards in terms of mold and lead paint and other horrible conditions in multifamily apartments that we are take months to get inspections for those kinds of problems, even when complaints come in. So there isn't an unlimited amount of money for general fund support to development services. There are limitations on what we're allowed to charge for in permit fees. So the question becomes, what's a higher priority, and in particular for staff time? That, as I mentioned at the outset of this hearing, I'm glad that our piece is to work on this hazardous materials part with the citizen volunteers, and we can manage that. We have the technology computer project that's in full force. We have all this permitting. We've got 22 staff that came on board earlier this year that are being trained up, and I've got a request for another 19 staff in the budget. So, you know, going from a bureau that had 150 staff just a year and a half ago to now having over 270 staff in the bureau. So these are all the challenges that we in development services are facing, and we can't continue to keep adding more planning projects, more code improvement projects that aren't part of a funded work plan.
Let me, and I appreciate this discussion. In fact, I think this hearing, I appreciate this whole hearing, and I think we do our best work when we have these public conversations. And I have learned some things today that I didn't understand. The testimony, the dialogue, I think has helped shape it. Let me offer an analogy, though. We occasionally have these hearings about the siting of cell phone towers, and we have community members come and say, we're very concerned about the health impacts. And the city has to say to them, the federal government has said, we are not allowed to consider the health impacts. We're preempted. That's how much power the industry has in Washington. We can't even evaluate it. Well, that's frustrating, because it's the elephant in the room. We don't know whether there are health impacts, but we're not even allowed to address it. Let me bring it closer to home. I don't know whether this is a problem or not. I don't know. If it happens at a site and someone is harmed because of it, I think we'd all feel terrible. So that's the only way I that's what I look at. So then the next thing I do is say, well, it's an issue. How have other cities and counties that are struggling with the same issues Commissioner Fritz has identified? Staffing, what kind of regulatory oversight, who's on first, different jurisdictions. So that's interesting. And what I see in the materials is it's a range, but there are a number of jurisdictions that require either someone to self-certify or an accredited asbestos inspector to say it's okay. That's how they've sliced it. And I don't know what's the right balance. Commissioner Fritz is absolutely right. We can't just sit here saying, all right, we want to fix this. Commissioner Fritz, find it within your budget. That's not fair. If the council says it's a priority, we have to find the resources to cover the cost. But what I've learned today is an issue has been framed that I think we all agree is serious. And Jeff, we know your reputation as a builder, so we know which side of the line you operate when you do your houses. But that doesn't mean everyone in the city is operating by those standards. And so there's an issue, and there's a couple of ways to deal with it. One range is heavy-handed, the other is lighter touch. I don't know which is the best one. I turn to the experts like Paul and his team and say, or DRAC, because you guys are a wonderful deliberative body. You can help us guide that.
And the state has a lot of ideas of how communications can go back and forth, because Chris Zimmer, who was our primary contact, was just elated that we have that checkbox, because that gives him to you.
Yeah.
And he has suggestions of how we can go forward, but it's just those conversations didn't happen until January.
I will comply with all such regulations.
Yeah. So that gives him some enforceable tool if somebody's reported. But we just started the conversation. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for more soft touches and hard touches.
So that's not chopped liver, right? I will comply with all such regulations. That's with initial. I guess where I land on this, because I am going to support the good work of that you brought forward to us. We're going to vote on it next week, but I will support it. Is just mayor and commissioner in charge, just some follow-up process to consider whether any of these other models would be adaptable to BDS with the clear understanding that if the commissioner in charge and the director feel that any of these is an enhancement, that the council needs to step up to fund whatever is the impact of that. And that's the only reasonable approach to this. But I do think within this stack of papers there are a couple of interesting ideas. And I would welcome, whether it's self-certification, whether it's an expert certifying, your question about can you delegate it to your agent or not, those are all great questions. But, hell, you brought this proposal before us. This one I think you could also come up with something that would move the ball. And I would hope we could do that on an expedited basis and have the commissioner in charge and the director tell us if there's a model that they would support.
Will that be in the record? I mean, because I didn't get a copy.
Yes, so
yes,
yeah.
It's in the record, and I'll give you mine.
So it'll be like online or something. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously the DRAC is a great resource.
And I will tell you, I do know what some of the problems in my house are. And the house next to me is the mirror image. And, you know, I've sort of been a little puzzled as to why people aren't wearing hard hats, and I'm a little puzzled by some of the accountability at the site. But I've watched what happened at that house, and stuff was just stripped. And I don't know whether there was asbestos or lead paint, but it is a 1920s bungalow. And I'm just, from what I've learned in my neighborhood, I'd be willing to bet there was. And there's a huge dumpster out front, and there's a house that was taken down in 2 days, and my 11-year-old son plays soccer in front of our house. So I just have a more than passing interest to know, have we done enough to make sure that the workers are safe? And he's safe. That's where it comes from. And if Commissioner Fritz comes back and says there's DRAC and she have come up with an idea, and it costs a little bit more, you know, I can't take it out of the rates to cover it, but I would support a general fund ask.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Commissioner, because even what we're proposing to adopt next week, as I mentioned at the beginning, does come with a price tag. The additional notification, the fact that there will be much more opportunity for appeals every proposed demolition will now have a delay and a potential appeal. So it's a staff person, and we'll again be asking the DRAC and the subcommittee to look at what's appropriate to tack on as a development, as an application fee, and what needs to be general funded. And certainly it's $92,000 that we'll be asking for as a new ask in the budget for the appeals waivers as a seed fund to start that off until we see how many there are.
And that's why it should be fully funded. And whatever the cost is, we should not burden you without the resources. I do know from my service in the Housing Authority of Portland Board, now Home Forward, that we used to get federal grants to do lead paint abatement. But in those units where we didn't act quickly enough, the consequences were horrific. And I just want to know that we've gone the extra mile on that one. And if it does set up the bad developer for getting whacked a little heavier by DEQ or EPA after they've certified something, Jeff, I think you would agree that person doesn't belong in your industry.
Right. We don't want to compete with that kind of person, mm-hmm. those of us that are, you know, legitimate. So.
But when we're talking about $92,000 for fee waivers, and we need to do that because it's that so that we have equity and it's not only the affluent neighborhood associations that can appeal, that takes money out of the general fund that then is not available to be spent on the additional enhanced inspections that we've asked for in the budget. So, you know, there's a finite amount. So for 400 demos, we've had this 8-month process now and got this great new set of standards. That's 400 homes versus, well, and obviously they've got homes around them as well, so maybe 2,000 homes are directly affected by them. There's apartment complexes that have hundreds of...
You know, homes. I'd even settle, I don't want to negotiate against myself, but there's even one jurisdiction that says you just have to post at the site your survey that says whether there is or there isn't. I mean, that's a public right-to-know issue, and then the complaint process drives. But I just think within here is something that adds to what I consider to be a significant improvement already with the language you've added, that you have to initial, but something else that might give the public a little more confidence.
Commissioner, I meant to bring this up and I forgot to. That $92,000 or $97,000 for that, does it make more sense to set a smaller block aside and analyze it to see if it's being used correctly as far as neighborhoods appealing, you know, and wanting to preserve a house versus neighborhoods thinking there's almost $100,000 there and we can kind of waste it if we want to on this one? Not to say they would necessarily do that, but think that way. I was thinking maybe if you set $15,000 aside, that would allow the dozen, right now there's been about a dozen appeals of 120 day, what, 12, 13? And over a period of, what, 3-4 years?
I don't remember what
that is. Anyway, I was thinking a lesser number and then look at it once those appeals go through. Is it working? Is it not working? Does it need to be tweaked rather than setting a bigger number aside? Just an idea.
There's no guarantee that the first dozen neighborhoods that come in are the ones that actually can't pay themselves.
Right. So, but I thought you could, you know, add a bump or something like that, add to it. I mean, I understand if it fell, if you use that money up in the first 4 months and you didn't have a bump coming for another two or three, something might fall between. But I was thinking of a lesser number to try to.
We at BDS are very diligent about using money from the correct buckets. Yeah. And so we can't dip into another bucket in order to front load it. This is the most honorable way, I think. And obviously, if we don't haven't used it, then we don't need another ask the next time.
Right. But this, with all due respect, is a citywide concern. And if Commissioner Fritz may be required to be the lead agency in implementing it, but if we're going to do it, the city has to back her up with the resources.
Right.
This is where the commission-style form of government sometimes seems rather siloed. I mean, she may have the burden, but the cost needs to be shared citywide. It is not fair to tag her with the cost. And frankly, this feels to me like a life safety issue that rises near the top. And that's why I would like to see if we could get DRAC to give us a recommendation sooner rather than later.
It also goes to in deconstruction, and you're saving older homes, and like you said, there's lead base paint on 99% of them, probably.
And these 1920 homes, Jeff Fish will tell you,
yes,
that there is asbestos wrapped around the pipes,
right,
in the basement.
And
there's lead paint, the stuff, and it is pervasive. And the reason we know that is we're often told when we buy our houses that there's that problem.
And I witnessed that on my little building inspector ride-along because I was asking deconstruction, and he was, you know, giving me all his building practices. And so I had to make a note. It's like, okay, when we're looking at deconstruction, we have to look at also what we're deconstructing and how that hazardous material is being handled. So I see that interaction with BPS and a deconstruction proposal that they need to look at the hazardous waste and how those codes won't conflict. You know, so it'd be great to take a house down and take all the wood away, but if you're exposing people to hazardous waste and not requiring that part piece of the puzzle, then you're going to have another problem.
Well, thank you again for all of your work. I think, Mayor, given the late hour, I won't ask the staff to come back up at this point, but Commissioner would be happy to do a full briefing for you on the work that has been done and you know, some of the suggestions that you have, what we've considered, what we might be able to move forward on.
And are you open to having the DRAC consider specifically whether any of these policies of other jurisdictions could be adapted to Portland?
Yes, and we have done some of that work already. That's since it's not in the code, I was able to make, for instance, the check the box change, right, myself as commissioner in charge. Given your interest in this, I'd be happy to partner with you to make sure that whatever we decide to move forward with within the Bureau is something that you would be comfortable with.
Very gracious.
Great. Well, thank you again. So this we've now amended the ordinance today and heard testimony, so we'll schedule it for second reading and council vote next week. And obviously, you'll be hearing more from us about the other elements of this issue that we've talked about today, and a schedule and public involvement opportunities on those as well. Thank you all
very much, everybody.
And we are adjourned until next week. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah.
No, it's good. I mean, they got...